Well, there's growing concern for many New Zealanders in Australia as temporary COVID JobKeeper payments cease while they remain ineligible for any other support. The Morrison government agreed to eligible New Zealanders employed before COVID receiving a fortnightly subsidy, but these payments are due to expire at the end of March. New Zealanders living in Australia can't claim unemployment benefit or insurance and are eligible to apply for citizenship no matter how long they've lived there. Today marks 20 years since Kiwis' rights were revoked under social security and citizenship laws. Rights advocates say this has led to an underclass, describing Kiwis in Australia as second-class citizens. Inaugural chairman of advocacy group Oz Kiwi, David Faulkner, says things have been getting progressively worse for New Zealanders living in Australia over the last 20 years. David Faulkner is with us from Sydney. Good morning, David.
Good morning.
Let's start with this current situation with the JobKeeper payments. What have eligible New Zealanders been receiving and how did it all happen?
The JobKeeper was a temporary payment introduced by the Morrison government it was a temporary stopgap while businesses were suffering under the COVID restrictions, for example, restaurants and so on and so forth. And so companies that were significantly affected by COVID could apply, and I believe it was for payments of $1,500 a fortnight for their eligible employees. And due to lobbying from the New Zealand government, that was extended to cover New Zealanders here in Australia.
So in some ways, do you believe it was about businesses trying to keep staff? Was that a prime motivation rather than something a bit more to do with the well-being of those New Zealanders? What do you think?
Well, I think that one of the main reasons for the JobKeeper was to, it was to prop up, keep businesses surviving through the COVID restrictions. But I guess it was also to stop the number of people on the unemployment benefit growing dramatically, which of course was not an issue for New Zealanders since we're not eligible for dole payments.
So after JobKeeper allowance ceases next month, will there be any further financial support for New Zealanders living in Australia?
Well, no, the New Zealanders will be the only cohort that can receive JobKeeper that then will have no safety net once JobKeeper is revoked. The only exception to that rule is if you have 10 continuous years in Australia and then you're entitled to a once-off 6 month maximum payment.
So 6 months maximum, and then what? You're on your own.
That's correct. It's quite interesting, though. Many New Zealanders I spoke with during the COVID lockdown had either used up that payment or actually had trouble, even though they were eligible, they were still being refused it at Centrelink anyway.
How do New Zealanders survive there with no financial support when they lose their job?
Well, you are left to your own devices, charity quite commonly. So people I know that run food bank charities, predominantly their customers, their clients are New Zealanders. Of course, people are just forced to sleep rough in their vehicles when they can no longer afford a roof over their head. Quite a few New Zealanders did return to Australia. But for many New Zealanders who have been here for many years and have put down roots, have homes, families and children born in Australia, that's not an easy option.
Sorry, many New Zealanders have returned to New Zealand. Is that what you meant?
Well, when COVID first hit, there was quite an exodus of people that could easily leave. I was contacted by people who literally decided to just abandon their possessions and head back to New Zealand. That tended to be younger people that had only been here for a short period of time, of course. And as I'm saying, for some people that was an option to return to New Zealand, but for others who have put down roots or or who simply cannot leave because they've got Australian-born children and they can't take them out of the country, then they're put in dire circumstances if they lose any or all their forms of income.
Let's remind ourselves of what the situation is for those New Zealanders. There's a difference between those who arrive pre-2001 and those who arrive post-2001. If you were there pre-2001, can you still seek a path to citizenship?
More formally, you actually had to be here on the day that the Howard government announced the deprivations, so the 26th of,
today.
Of February 2001, yes, 20 years ago. If you were here on that day, even if you were just coming across as a tourist from New Zealand, then you have protected status under the Social Security Act and you are considered a permanent resident for citizenship application. So, yes, that's correct.
So if you had been living there but happened to be in New Zealand on the 26th of February 2001, were you excluded?
The other saving provision was if you lived in Australia for at least 12 months of the previous 2 years.
Right, so, okay.
Yeah, so, for example, myself, I had lived in Australia since 1970, but I was seconded overseas by my Australian employer, and thus I didn't make either of those conditions despite having lived in Australia for most of my life.
So you've lived there for 50 years, but you have no path to citizenship.
No, I actually had to re-immigrate to Australia while I was living here.
So how did that work, David? Can you explain?
Well, a pathway did become available for me due to a policy change some years ago. So New Zealanders were, prior to 94, automatically regarded as permanent residents if you were here, even though you didn't have a permanent visa or an entry permit. So there was a rule change where you could re-immigrate as a former permanent resident. So that was the pathway that I and a number of Kiwis lucky enough to fall into that category have been able to use. But, of course, if you first arrived after 1994, then you cannot use that pathway.
Right. So that was one loophole. Are there any other loopholes for those since 26 February 2001 who, let's face it, have been living there for 20 years, may have started businesses, have certainly been contributing to businesses and paying taxes and may have Australian children with Australian partners and kids in school? Is there any path for any of them to citizenship?
Well, they first have to gain a permanent visa. They cannot apply directly for citizenship regardless of their length of residence. So, and of course, it's becoming more and more ridiculous. We now have Kiwis that have arrived as small children in 2001 that have grown up, lived virtually their entire lives here, consider themselves Australian, and remain ineligible to apply. So the only concession that has been made by the Australian government since towards this is they did introduce a new visa category specifically for New Zealanders, which allows you to apply if you've had a taxable income over a certain threshold for 5 continuous years.
Is this the 189 visa?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay.
But any visa, apart from the one I was able to get as a former permanent resident, is very expensive, and it's quite a process. So a family with a couple of kids can expect to easily pay $12,000. In application fees and assistance from a migration agent to apply. So it's a very high barrier that effectively it's a huge deterrent for even people that do qualify for that particular visa to actually apply for one. In fact, it's been a bit of a dead cat bounce. There was about 10,000 applicants when it first became available, and that's just gone. It's just died down to a trickle now. So it's clearly not a solution to the issue.
However, help me out here. If you apply and get that 189 visa, does that give you a path to permanent residency and a path to citizenship or not?
That visa is a permanent visa. So once you hold a permanent visa, then you have a pathway to citizenship.
So for those who can't or haven't got the 189 visa and perhaps can't because they don't earn enough,
yep,
and many of whom may have married Australians, as we said, Australian-born, Australian citizens, have children born in Australia. What is their situation for any social security? Even if your partner's Australian, your kids are Australian, if you get sick or if you lose your job, there is no social security?
That's correct. Yes, that's right. So the only exception to that rule is if you have an Australian-born child, and you're not eligible for any other payment, then you can apply for social security for the child. However, it's typically not really an option for New Zealanders, because the one benefit New Zealanders can get is called the family tax benefit. It's not actually a dole payment. It's a tax credit,
right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and so typically that negates you from even claiming social security for your Australian child, or makes it pointless.
So the Australian-born children of a New Zealander who's ineligible, do they have full rights, however, because they're Australian-born and they're Australian citizens, the children?
Well, no, it depends. In fact, New Zealanders have, based on my census data research, are the single biggest cohort in Australia with children that are born here that are not born citizens. So if both parents are New Zealand citizens, post 2001 arrivals, then their children born here are not Australian citizens either, and are not entitled to any social
security. Just pause for a moment. You're telling me is that Australians born in Australia are now not entitled to citizenship because their parents are New Zealanders.
Yes, those the children. Children, if they remain in Australia, they will become citizens on their 10th birthday.
Right.
But up until their 10th birthday, they are born non-citizens. And as I said, the primary cohort of children born in Australia as non-citizens have New Zealander parents. And that percentage is growing. So, sooner or later, the vast majority of those children will be born to New Zealand parents. And, of course, they're not entitled to a raft. Well, they're excluded from exactly the same support that their parents are. And it's not just social security. One of the big issues is if the child's born with a disability, that they're just denied disability services. So this is a very serious problem.
Can you explain why the 189 visa is not working? Because on the face of it, the minimum you have to earn is 54,000, correct?
Yes.
So that's around about the average wage, yeah?
Uh-huh.
So why is that not a more popular route towards getting permanent residency?
So here's the trap. Of course, New Zealanders do not need a permanent visa to remain in Australia permanently. By virtue of the Trans-Tasman travel arrangement, and it's a reciprocal. So Australians do not need to apply for permission to remain in New Zealand either. So the whole purpose of that is so because of that, New Zealanders generally see a visa application as it's not paying for permission to remain. It's actually a citizenship fee. That's actually how New Zealanders view it. And, of course, any other national has to pay that money if they want to remain in Australia. But, of course, for New Zealanders, it's effectively a citizen and social security application fee. And many New Zealanders, even those that are eligible for it, are deterred by that high cost. Either they don't have that money spare, or they're not prepared to pay that much to gain Australian citizenship.
So are some caught out then, living there in the conditions that they are able to live in because of the Trans-Tasman agreement, but then caught out when something goes wrong?
Oh, yes, that's right. So, and of course, unfortunately, people are generally moving to Australia with high expectations. They're coming here because of better wages, more employment opportunities. They're not expecting things to go wrong, but it's when things go pear-shaped, they find themselves in a very, very difficult situation.
Do people have awareness then when they're going to live in Australia, and particularly when they're partnering and having children, do they have an awareness of what the situation is?
I think awareness has changed in the last decade. It was since, I think, prior to 2000, the main issue, or the main thing that raised awareness was, of course, the cyclone Yasi in Queensland and the flooding in Brisbane, and many Kiwis found out they were being denied disaster relief payments, and that's I think when it first got a lot of press, and New Zealanders started to become aware of the situation. There's been, of course, a lot more press since then, but you find many of the Kiwis that arrived prior to that just had no idea. They just thought, and it's a natural assumption to say, I'm allowed to live permanently in the country at some point in time after paying taxes for years and so on and so forth, I should gain equal rights. Of course, awareness has grown since, awareness of all the little traps, I don't think so. You have to be a lawyer, and even lawyers aren't really up on it. I've studied the issue for many years, so I am. But, for example, people just don't know about the Hague Convention, don't know if they have a child, for example, born in Australia, that they might end up trapped here. They can't take the child back to New Zealand because the partner is stopping them under the convention, and they're not entitled to any support, so they're trapped in a desperate situation.
The mining booms, they come and go, and is that often a time where a lot of Kiwis will go there and then looking to leave, or perhaps a marriage is broken up and they find out their reality?
Oh, yes, yeah. I mean, the flows are tidal. They're based on the relative economic conditions in both countries, and there'll be another boom in Australia and New Zealand won't be doing so well, and you'll see the same thing happen. But that's right. Even New Zealanders might come across here and initially intending to only come temporarily and return anyway, but, you know, life tends to change. And so even those coming across well aware of the issues can inadvertently find themselves trapped.
On its 20th anniversary, it's interesting to go back and look at the origins of this. And I recall it well, actually, because if I recall correctly, John Howard, your then Prime Minister, was in New Zealand on a bilateral visit where this bombshell was dropped on the New Zealand government. Yep. I can remember the looks on the faces of the respective Prime Ministers as we sit here. And, of course, the impacts affected, ultimately, so many New Zealanders living there for so long. I have my recollection of what may have motivated the Australian government to do this. What is the received record?
Well, it's interesting. Dr. Karen Jones has recently published a thesis entitled Kiwis Across the Ditch, in which she interviewed many of the key players behind the scenes in both sides of the Tasman. There was, of course, you had the initial motivation was, of course, a lot of New Zealanders were going across to Australia in the 90s because of the protracted recession that hit New Zealand harder than Australia. As part of my own studies, I noted that you were seeing a large number of Maori and Pacific Islanders coming across, blue-collar workers, which Maori and Pacific Islanders made up quite a large cohort. So there were two prongs to it, really. Australia was not pleased about the current Social Security treaty and the growing number of New Zealanders arriving, and in particular, the cohort of Pacific Islanders that, in particular, coming from Samoa, gaining New Zealand citizenship, and then on to Australia. It was the Australians considered that the Social Security was attracting this particular cohort of people, and so, in fact, as far back as early 1999, prior to the Clark government, John Howard had actually raised and got a provisional agreement from then Prime Minister Shipley, this is according to Ms. Jones's thesis, To actually curtail social security for New Zealanders in Australia. This was said in the context of course, New Zealand wanting to negotiate a better, closer economic relationship agreement with Australia.
So were those rights traded away?
In an
unconfirmed deal and a confirmed deal, because it wasn't announced at that time.
No, that's right. So this is information according to Dr. Karen Jones,
right.
Based on interviews she had with.
Because something else happened, David. In 2000, the now Clark government, which came in at the end of 1999, won that election, announced an amnesty for immigrants in New Zealand, and up to 8,000 actually living in New Zealand without a visa. And that was also perceived to have triggered this just a short time later from John Howard, the perception being that New Zealand would then be seen as a backdoor entry to Australia for said immigrants. Was that raised?
Well, it certainly was used by Australia in the negotiations. Importantly, according to Dr. Jones's thesis, of course, the actual Australia's position was cemented way back in the beginning of 99 with a provisional agreement to do so from Jenny Shipley, and alternatively, during the 99 election, John Howard offered the prospect of, instead of curtailing social security for New Zealanders, the alternative was for New Zealand to implement a common border with Australia, and in particular curtail Pacific Islander migration to New Zealand and then on to Australia. So Australia's position was well formulated even as before the Clark government came into power and official negotiations actually started. So Australia just really did not change their position at all, and of course used the amnesty to further press their position.
Is it a racist policy then?
Well, as I'll quote you from Dr. Jones' thesis, the intrinsic relationship between Australian concerns about social security expenditure and their fears about New Zealand's border policies, born of beliefs associating particular cohorts of New Zealanders, Pacific peoples with benefit-seeking behaviours, was the paramount issue concerning free movement. So the Howard government was actually, well, New Zealand was actually concerned that the Trans-Tasman travel arrangement would be terminated by Australia, and of course that would have cascading damage into closer economic relationship.
It's an extraordinary piece of our history, although I'm very aware of the lived reality that continues today. We have another matter, of course, which is the policy of the Australian government deporting New Zealand-born, sometimes only born, citizens back to the country if they've committed criminal offending. Do you see any mood or any possibility at any level of these any of these stances changing?
Not while there's a coalition government in power in Australia. They gain political mileage by being tough on migrants. So the only hope I really see is for Labor to come back into power. Labor at the last Australian election did have a policy to deal with the inequality that New Zealanders were experiencing. They didn't have a crystal clear policy, but it was a publicly announced policy. So that I see as the only real hope for change. I mean, I have looked at legal aspects of it. For example, I've had a merits review from legal firms saying that it The situation could be challenged as unconstitutional, i.e. preventing a particular cohort of the Australian population from becoming citizens and voting when Australia is a constitutional democracy. But of course, legal action is very difficult to undertake and tremendously expensive.
Well, thank you, David. And by the way, happy 50th. As a citizen of Australia, well, not a citizen, as a resident of Australia and latterly a citizen of Australia.
I actually did become a citizen of Australia.
Yeah, ultimately. So, yeah, thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
David Faulkner, who is the inaugural chairman of advocacy group Oz Kiwi.